When I say the word politics, what immediately comes to mind for you?
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is, like, saying things without actually saying things.
Rich white people.
I really don't want to have a conversation about it. Politics is politics.
Honestly, just lots of people arguing about some very interesting topics.
The first thing that comes to my mind is Judith Collins.
And how would you describe politics to a mate?
Conflicts.
Farming.
Colours as well.
Indecisiveness.
It's like a game. People never want to say what, you know, their real intentions are, I guess. It's something that I want to get more into, but it's just like I don't really know where to start.
Start here with the Not at the Dinner Table podcast.
To discuss all things political that you're not allowed to at dinner.
Especially if your granddad's coming over.
We really briefly mentioned it last week, but we wanted to come back to the Stuff article from earlier in the year where StudyLink, which is a part of the Ministry of Social Development, told a student to live off with noodles to help them pay for everything as they studied.
Which, to me, really kind of sums up the whole issue when it comes to young people, you know, including students, trying to pay for a place to live as they study or work or, you know, do whatever it is that they're doing. Especially because the median rent in New Zealand, so median weekly rent, is $340 a week, according to the 2018 census.
Yeah, and back again to Stuff, our good old friend, but they reported in February that this year, Porirua, north of Wellington, is now the most expensive place in the country to rent, with the median rent being $680 per week. So that's saying it's more expensive than Auckland.
I mean, we might say that that's expensive. It is expensive. But for emergency housing, for people that need emergency housing, we're paying $1 million a day to house everyone who needs emergency housing in motel rooms and, you know, whatever other accommodation that's been organised for them. Not the most encouraging or upbeat introduction we've ever done. But we're speaking to three different people who know lots around the topic of renting and housing. And they are Nicola Willis, who's the National Party spokesperson for housing, Tamitha Paul, who is a Wellington City Councillor for the Pukehino Lambton Ward, and Penny Arthur from the Tenants Protection Association here in Christchurch.
Two of them are my interviews, one's Donkins.
Yes.
But Nicola, believe it or not, a while ago she was a young person too.
What?
And 20 years ago when she was a student, she had leaks in her windows. She used to find ice crystals along the sills in the winter. But we'll hear from her soon.
By ice crystals, do you just mean icicles?
Yeah, but yeah. I think, yeah, just icicles. Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Ice crystals, icicles.
Yeah, whatever.
You know what we're talking about.
But first, I spoke to Tamitha Paul from the Wellington City Council about the state of the rental market for young people.
So my name is Tamitha Paul, and I'm a Wellington City Councillor for the Central Wellington City, Pukehino Lambton Ward. I'm the Deputy Chair of one of our committees of the whole, so our Planning and Environment Committee. I graduated from uni in 2018 and pretty much came straight onto council. So,
what did you study?
Oh, a bit embarrassing. I did politics and international relations. So I'm also a student, and I'm doing my master's at the moment in planning, so like town planning, stuff like that.
Are you currently renting the house that you're living in?
Yes. So I'm renting with six other flatmates and
six
a dog.
Six other flatmates. So if you don't mind me asking, what are you paying for rent?
So my rent's $250.
And that's just and rent, or is that including power and internet?
That's just rent.
How would you sum up what's wrong with the rental housing market, particularly for students who are looking for a flat?
I'd sum it up by saying there's just simply not enough. On that supply end, you've got a very small pool of houses and a very large number and growing number of people moving to cities to pursue the different opportunities that it provides, whether it's tertiary education or some other form of training. And what that means is that because students are seen as not an ideal tenant, somehow that justifies us having to live in inhumane conditions. And we scrap over that, you know. You'll see 100 different people going to a flat viewing for like a disgusting, moldy dungeon, essentially. And that's become the norm. And more disgusting than that, it's seen as a rite of passage for being a student. Like there's some kind of poverty that you have to endure while you're racking up debt that will take you half of your life to pay off. And that's the cost of education. And that's a decision that's upheld by people who now are politicians who benefited from not only free tertiary education, but also affordable rents.
So when you say there's not enough in the way of rental properties specifically for students, is that not enough full stop, or is that just not enough in the way of property that's actually healthy to live in?
Both. There's not enough of anything.
What's the very first step that you would take personally towards beginning to remedy this problem?
The very first step I would take is, and am currently taking, is how do we build more public housing? You know, there are thousands of people who are in the private rental market who could be moved into publicly provisioned housing. And that immediately frees up so much more housing for students as well. But also, I mean, I think public housing should be available to students as well, because we undoubtedly meet the income requirements of living in public housing.
So when you say first thing you'd do is increase the amount of public housing, is it accurate to straight away think state housing, or is that more, you know, would that be a mix of council provided, government provided, community organisation provided?
Yeah, it has to be a mix. None of those actors can provide the kind of dire housing need on their own. And every provider has their own kind of prerogative about what kind of people they want to house. So like councils typically around the country have had a tradition of housing elderly and pensioners, but that has to broaden, because what the private market has shown is that it only serves a minority of people who are the most privileged people in society. And that's why we can't solely rely on the private market to supply houses to those most in need, including students, because building more houses doesn't necessarily mean more people will be in those houses. It means that there are more opportunities for investors to buy up houses and to sell those off, or to just hold on to them and leave them empty.
Bringing it back to students and their search for accommodation, whether that be in a hall or a flat, what rights do they need to know that they have when it comes to renting?
The tricky thing is that, there are rights. You have many different rights under the Residential Tenancies Act. The reality is most students don't go to the tenancy tribunal and they don't actually enforce their rights. And even if they knew their rights, they don't enforce them through the mechanism that they have there to protect them, because then what, you know, the landlord will be liable for peanuts compared to the distress they cause to their tenants. And then the tenant will get kicked out because the landlord will find some convenient reason to get rid of them. And they're just back into the kind of rat race of trying to find accommodation. So it's like our tenancy rights have to be a lot stronger.
Comes back around to the private owners of the property that students are wanting to rent.
Exactly. There's like no perfect advice to give to a renter, because you could be the most perfect tenant in the world and still get screwed over. The big thing I'd say is that community law centres are your best friend. You know, there are great lawyers and housing lawyers out there who can provide you with advice, and it's worth fighting for it. The politicians are not just going to wake up one day and realise that what's happening is a gross breach of human rights. You know, they're not going to just wake up and feel that way. We have to make them take this seriously. We just all need to like connect and start using our democratic power to hold our government to account for their lack of action on the housing crisis. That's actually all we have. We've got nothing else. But that's totally doable. And as I said, it's been done in our past and it's been done around the world. And it's something we need to get onto as well if we want anything to change significantly.
So basically, Tamitha is saying that we have to band together to fix the housing market. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. Essentially, as she put it, the only influence, well, not the only influence, but the biggest influence that everyday people can have is when we group together for our what she called democratic power. As we mentioned at the start, Nicola Willis had some pretty poor housing conditions when she was a student. But despite those housing conditions not having improved a whole lot since then, she has some very different ideas of how to fix this crisis than the current Labour government does.
The first thing I asked Nicola was about zoning for where housing can be built, which sounds a bit boring, but she kind of makes it a bit more simple.
So how will freeing up where houses can be built benefit young people?
I think it's well established that New Zealand has significant housing challenges, whether you're looking at rents, which have rocketed up more than $100 on average a week in just the past 4 years, or whether you're looking at how challenging it can be to just find a rental property. So what we need to move from is a situation where we've got a shortage of homes to a situation where we have a huge choice of homes for people. So what we have done together with the government is put forward a bill which would move from having a situation where the zoning rules and red tape different in all the different parts of the city and our main urban centres, to one where the default expectation is that anyone can have up to 3 dwellings per section, up to 3 stories in height, and that there has to be a really good reason to say no to that, rather than making people have a really good reason to say yes to that.
On community housing providers, you've said, and National's said as a whole, that the current government does not have a good track record on delivering housing. Why doesn't the National Party have their own plan to deliver this housing instead of placing all the responsibility on community housing providers?
Well, absolutely, we do have a plan, and we have said that, yes, the government should be building more state housing, in particular for our most vulnerable and lowest income citizens. I think pretty well known that the government promised 100,000 KiwiBuild homes, for example, and actually it's built just over 1,000, so it's totally missed those targets. And one of the techniques the government has used to pump up their numbers of houses that they're bringing online is they've literally gone into the private market and bought homes and then relabeled them as government homes. My view is that's not helpful at all, because then what they're actually doing is competing with a potential first home buyer to buy that home and pumping up the price and taking it away from someone else in the first place. So I think there are limits on what the government can do. Yes, they should be part of the solution, and yes, that they should be building homes. But let's also look at the other organisations we have in our communities who've got proven track records of delivering great housing.
Would you say that giving that money to community housing providers and kind of grassroots groups that have already got that knowledge of the community is better than trying to work on state housing themselves?
Well, I think it's both. I think it's an and situation. We have a desperate shortage of homes in this country. We literally have 4,500 children having to live in emergency motel rooms with their parents. You know, we have a situation where there are 24,000 people, individual clients, some of those are families, on the state house waiting list, waiting on average more than 200 days to be housed. So when you've got that bigger problem, I think you need all hands on deck.
Would your kind of solution to stop increasing rents be kind of taking off these responsibilities that are put on landlords or these regulations that have been put in place?
No, absolutely. National agrees that landlords need to face responsibilities and rules about the quality and safety of the homes that they're providing. We don't argue that. What I'm saying is that it is exactly the wrong time, when there's huge inflation, when rents have been climbing very high, it is exactly the wrong time for the government to be putting on increased taxes onto landlords. They've done that, saying that they want to tilt the balance back to first home buyers. Actually, what they're doing is tilting the balance to harm renters. And I'm opposed to that. I see failure from the government and Jacinda Ardern. And when they were asked about housing and what they would do to solve it, Bill English would say, well, we need to do actually a series of things, including changing the rules in the Resource Management Act about where you can build houses, changing the zoning rules, working with community housing providers. And he would sound quite dry, if I'm honest, like maybe a little bit boring. And then Jacinda Ardern would say, well, we are going to build 100,000 KiwiBuild houses. And that was kind of it, end of argument. She would win that debating point. But of course, she didn't build 100,000 KiwiBuild houses. That was virtually a hoax. That didn't happen. Things would be different if that had been achieved. It hasn't been achieved. And only now, 4 years later, are the government coming around to the view that, yeah, they should do things on the RMA and on red tape. So I'm really pleased that they've worked with us, that Judith Collins and I were able to stand together with Megan Woods and David Parker and announce a bipartisan effort to get rid of some of that red tape. But I just wish they'd done it 4 years ago.
Jen, why am I not surprised that the rules and regulations that are placed on landlords can have a flow-on effect for the tenants in terms of how much they get charged in rent?
Obviously, if the price of business goes up, then the price of rent goes up. But I think we've heard too much about the politics of renting. What about the fact that some flats are just not up to standard? They're just a bit gross.
I was cleaning mould off the roof of my bathroom the other day. So, I mean, I wouldn't have said my flat was bad, but, you know, it's mould is one of the things that is covered by the Healthy Homes Standards. And you chatted to a landlord and some students and also heard a little bit more from Nicola and also Penny Arthur, who we mentioned at the start of the episode, about the quality of rental housing.
Dampness and mould are common in New Zealand houses. However, Stats NZ reported in 2020 that if you're renting, you're more likely to experience these problems. What standard are the flats that our young people live in?
A pretty high standards flat. It's quite new and quite modern.
It's all right. It is very cluttered.
Pretty good, but it's old. It's a really old house, like over 100 years old.
Yeah, it's just at the moment we can't use the garage, which is dumb because they're taking it down, so we have no garage. But other than that, it's good.
And even though students might be living in good flats now, everyone's had a bad flooding experience, even MP Nicola Willis.
I lived in what was meant to be, I think, kind of like the glass house or the adjoining kind of sunroom. So that was joyous in that there were lovely leaks in the window. So in winter, I was very pleased to sometimes find ice crystals along my windowsill, which was very close to where I slept. And I had to be admitted for my asthma several times.
Managing Director at A1 Property Managers, Hamish Wilson, tells us what we can expect from our future landlords.
There's an obligation to provide the property in a reasonable state of cleanliness. The second main responsibility is that the property must be kept in a reasonable state of repair, having regard to the age and the character of the premises. The best advice that we give to our new tenants is, if you're not sure, just give us a call and we will guide you through and step you through what we can and can't do. One thing that we don't get involved in, and that's inter-flat politics. The rest we can generally try and help with.
But landlords aren't the only party in a tenancy agreement. Do young people know their rights and responsibilities as a tenant?
Pay rent, pay the bills on time, definitely. Get along with the flatmates. I do know that if they want to remove you, the landlord, you need at least, I think, 2 weeks' notice.
I do. I read my contract.
Yeah, it was pretty clear when we moved in what the expectations were and stuff. Yeah.
Not fully, no.
Penny Arthur from the Tenants Protections Association thinks it should be taught in high school.
Yep, there's an expectation that once you reach an age that you can go flatting, that all of a sudden you know what that means and what your responsibilities are and what you're paying for. And realistically, but most people don't until something goes wrong. Yeah, it's definitely something that we're keen to put into high schools sort of towards the end of year, sort of 12 and 13, and just sort of start having those conversations before people start moving out on their own.
And conversations about renting rights should be encouraged. Over the past couple of years, the idea of a warrant of fitness for rentals has been floated around Parliament. The Green Party believes that this will ensure healthy home standards are adhered to without tenants trying to hold their landlords to account. MP Nicola Willis and landlord Hamish Wilson disagree.
How do you actually enforce those standards and what effect does that have on the way through? Because for the brilliant landlord who's already doing everything right, it actually creates another tick box exercise they have to go through and a lot of compliance. Whereas, does it do enough to really focus on that landlord at the bottom?
Well, I guess I wonder where it stops. Wellington City Council tried to bring a warrant of fitness in. That didn't get any traction at all. We've now got the healthy home standard, which, there is a requirement for compliance there. What would a warrant of fitness do over and above that? Probably not a lot. The loss of tax deductibility and that, it's kind of rigged for end user failure. And the poor old tenants are the ones at the end of that spectrum, I guess, and they're the ones that sort of feel the pain from all that additional compliance and expenditure.
There are rules, regulations and responsibilities every party in an agreement has. However, if people aren't aware of them, they won't use them. So educating yourself on renters' rights is a must.
So now we know that not all landlords are complete demons, but most of them.
I guess, you know, not everyone is out to get you.
They do have some responsibilities and things that they can be held to account for. What are your options when landlords aren't doing what they should be doing?
Well, you can't do much when it comes to your landlord's behaviour. So if they're being a bit of an ass, can't really do too much about it.
Damn it.
But if you are having other issues like broken things not being repaired, the Tenancy Tribunal may actually be able to help you.
So my name is Penny Arthur and I'm manager of Tenants Protection Association in Christchurch. So we provide tenancy advice and advocacy to people that are living in homes they don't own.
The big question that we're all after is, what is the Tenancy Tribunal?
Good question. It's something to be a little bit wary of, but it's not something to be afraid of. The good thing with the tribunal, there's two things. It's cheap and it's quick. So it costs $20.44 to file an application. It's So it's really cheap. It's relatively quick. If it's something urgent, it can often be dealt with within a few weeks. If it's something not quite so urgent, it will be scheduled sort of at the next time that's available. And until you go to your hearing, you can still negotiate. You can put in your application. Tenancy Service has a mediation service. So you might be able to go to mediation and see if you can work it out, work out the differences that you've got with your landlord. And then if you still can't, you can still make that decision whether you carry on to the tribunal or withdraw your application.
How does that go from there?
On the day, what happens is that you and your landlord will get called into the room, and it's just kind of like a room. It's not like a courtroom. The person who's hearing your case is called an adjudicator, so it's not a judge. Whoever's made the application speaks first, and they sort of say what their problem is and what they want done. And one really important tip for tenants is that if the landlord's made the application, they might talk for half an hour or they might talk for 40 minutes. Don't feel rushed. And often what happens is afterwards the tenants will come to us and say, well, they talk for 40 minutes and then the adjudicator said, what do you want to say? And I just went, oh, nothing, because there's no time now. Don't back down. And a really important thing is if you can go with something written, then you can actually take your time and go through what you've written down as being your response. From there, they'll make a decision. They might make it on the spot if it's something quite simple. Otherwise, it might take a week or two for them to come through with their decision.
And they can appeal that decision if they're not happy with it, right?
Yeah, so there's two things. First of all, there's what's called a rehearing. So if you sort of feel that there's something in the that has gone wrong during the hearing, if you missed it for some reason, if there's something that happened as to why you weren't able to be there on the day, you can ask for a rehearing as well. Otherwise, the other one is an appeal, which does go to the district court. So a rehearing stays in the tribunal. An appeal goes to the district court.
And what sort of things can't you take to the tribunal?
The tenancy tribunal only covers your tenancy under the Residential Tenancies Act. If you're a flatmate, and your name's not on the agreement with the landlord, you're not covered. But yeah, basically, if people aren't sure if they can go to the tribunal, the first place to look is your tenancy agreement. And anything they've put into that, if your landlord isn't following it, then that's called a breach of your tenancy agreement. And beyond that, anything that's a breach of the Residential Tenancies Act can also go to the tribunal.
It didn't make it into the final edit, but I learnt from your chat with Penny that it isn't actually your landlords that hold on to your bond.
Yeah, it's actually the tenancy services that hold on to that.
And it was something that you'd learnt as well, because you came back from your interview with Penny and I was sitting at the table listening to some music and you're like, Sam, there's this thing I learnt.
Yeah, and apparently 60% of people around about don't actually know that.
Wild.
Who knew?
You know what else is wild?
What?
The fact that next week is our last episode of the show.
We're talking about LGBTQ issues, so the current bills that are going through Parliament. So that is the lovely Conversion Therapy Practices Bill.
Which you made a submission on.
Yeah, I made a submission on, but I couldn't find it in amongst the 100-something thousand submissions that they had.
You were saying to me that they have 4 sub-select committees to work through those 100,000 plus submissions on this bill, and that they've got until the end of the year to do so.
Yeah. So most probably don't have that many, but you know, it's a tough topic.
Got people engaged.
Yeah. A product of the New Zealand Broadcasting School at Ara Institute of Canterbury.